It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Good Thursday morning, everyone. Welcome to the VolQuest.com Mailbag Podcast, presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions, and we continue to thank them for all that they do for us and their continued support of VolQuest.com. Be sure and check them out at ExteriorHomeSolutions.com. You can get a free estimate for all your roofing needs, siding, whatever you need. They can take care of you at Exterior Home Solutions. With Austin Price, Rob Lewis, and Grant Ramey, I'm Brent Hubbs. Glad to have you along with us. Guys, we're going to do all the mailbag questions, but I'm going to do my first mailbag questions first. And this is from Brent underscore Hubbs. Grant Ramey, what do you make of the college football playoff system and the rankings that came out on Tuesday night?
Listen, if they're looking for attention every week with these weekly updates, they're getting it, because I don't know what it looks like December 8th or whatever it is, but it's a lot to talk about every Tuesday night until that date gets here. I mean, I think that's all it is right now. Like, you're fighting for a spot until you're not. If you're in it, you're in it. Tennessee, I expected them to go up. I didn't expect them to stay still, but I guess if you come back on the final drive to beat Utah, if you're BYU, and if you beat Michigan 20-15 at home, that's good enough to move up. So I don't really understand it, but you know what? It's something to talk about in the month of November.
I think they're a joke. I really do. You could tell me if Tennessee was 2-8 and they were not in this, I would tell you that it's a joke. Penn State ranked as high as they are. They've beat nobody all year.
Unbelievable.
Beat nobody all year. You know, I mean, you start looking at the teams, Indiana. I mean, listen, man, I think Indiana's a fantastic story. I'm not saying that even with a loss, you know, as long as they keep it close to Ohio State, they shouldn't be in the conversation. Shouldn't be as high as they are. BYU is a fraud of a program that, you know, again, they're not playing nobody. But, I mean, it is what it is. At this point, you know, I mean, what's stopping some of these SEC ADs from just saying, hey, better just move to the Big Ten and play nobody, or move to the Big 12? I mean, like – rewarded. I'm not saying these teams shouldn't be ranked in the 12, but how they're ranked is where I have an issue. It's like, I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, I just don't get it. But whatever. It's what happens when you have presidents and of certain schools that are in certain conferences, you know, helping run this thing. To me, like, you needed outside figures in some form or fashion to be the total decision maker in this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to be Mr. SEC blockhead, you know.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, better the South. But I watched the last quarter and a half of that Utah-BYU game the other night, which looked fantastic, by the way, on television. Blue and red uniforms.
Agreed.
Take note, every AD everywhere. But, I mean, I am not trying to be SEC rules all. I mean, I don't think BYU would finish in the top six in this. Maybe. Not top eight. I mean, South Carolina would whip BYU. Just, I mean, mop the field with it. I mean, and again, maybe incredible SEC bias. I admit it. But I watched, you know, a good bit of that game. I mean, neither one of those teams could compete in the SEC.
Well, but, same thing with Indiana and Michigan, Grant. I mean, like, we watched that game. You said there was none of me. I mean, they beat a 5-5 Michigan team. A Michigan team that may or may not make a bowl game.
Struggled.
So, I mean, like, again, I think for everybody that's, like, you know, in the mix for fringe, right? Like, let's say Tennessee wins this week, it doesn't matter because they'll be firmly locked in. But if they lose, we're talking about Tennessee, Ole Miss, Alabama, the two lost SEC teams. Like, you're hoping Ohio State just takes Indiana outside the woodshed and puts them out of their misery to the point where, like, they have to drop them. If Georgia fell 9 spots by losing to an Ole Miss team that's now ranked in the deal, how many spots will Indiana fall if they get hammered next week in Columbus?
And Indiana's BYU doesn't matter because there's a Big 12 team getting in. It could be BYU.
Correct.
It could be Colorado. That doesn't matter.
That's a good point.
You're just arguing rankings, which I guess that's what they put these things out for, to have these conversations. Indiana and the like, and LSU and Alabama or whoever else, Ole Miss, I guess now instead of LSU, those are the ones you have to be worried about if you're trying to get one of those spots, because it's the SEC and it's the Big Ten fighting for X number of spots each. And if you're trying to get in, you need a lot of those teams in that conversation to drop out of.
And then Ward Manuel's, you know, justification for why Tennessee didn't move up, these teams did, and, you know, like beating teams that were 4-4 and 5-5. I mean, like, what a joke. And then McElroy on the thing, and I know he's not necessarily, like, he's just kind of talking, but, like, you know, saying, well, I mean, Ole Miss, you know, I mean, they had 2 fourth downs converted on them against them or they'd be undefeated. You still lost at home as a double-digit point favorite to a Kentucky team that's either going to win 4 or 5 games. Like, that's a damning loss. Like, some of the justification I don't understand. I can actually get behind Alabama with quality wins, even though they had the head-to-head loss to Tennessee being right with Tennessee more so than, you know, some of the other stuff they're trying to argue.
All right, so I got my answer to my question. Thank you all very much. I appreciate
Thank you, Brent underscore Hubs, for your question. We appreciate you tuning in to the VolQuest.
And we'll move along to our first question.
Homer, are you not going to get a percentage from AP on what percentage Tennessee makes the playoff? AP?
No, I tell you what, based on last night, based on Tuesday night, Tennessee needs a lot of help. I mean, if they don't win this game on Saturday, that's, you know. But who knows what the storyline is next week and what the narrative becomes next week?
I would tell you they don't need a lot of help, but they're going to need the right and proper help. I think, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think they have to have all these things go on. They don't have to have 4 or 5 teams lose. I think they have to have the right teams lose. And I think that's the hard part, because when you're banking on 1 or 2 schools that need to lose, that's hard, because it's not like you have like 4 or 5 different options here. Agreed. It's like a couple people.
Yeah, agreed. That's a good point. Better way to say it than what I did. All right, here we go. DeKalb County Ball wants to know, other than Juwan Jennings' catch against Georgia, what are your most memorable moments against the Dogs?
Little man Stewart's run down in Athens, where he almost gets caught.
That was the 94 game.
Yes. I loved that game as a young kid. I guess I was 11 at the time. Living in Morristown at the time.
That's one of the last away games I went to as a civilian. Todd Helton, quarterback.
Yep. I was answering phones for the post game radio show for the Vol Network.
When did they throw the ball like 8 times that game?
I think it was maybe he threw it 9 times in that game. Seven to nine.
And one of them was like an 80-yard completion to Billy Williams from Alcoa. Yeah.
And he threw a touchdown pass in that game to like Courtney Epps or somebody.
I got to tell you, for some reason, a lot of my memories are bad. I remember the punt block. Was it Ryan Carl in 06?
No, and
Antonio Wardlow.
Antonio Wardlow, yeah.
But I remember, golly, Hubbard, what was the one? I can remember, because it was Tennessee had like 8,000 recruits in the stands. It was a super tight game. It was maybe 04. Casey was definitely quarterback, and Georgia scooped one up and returned it 90 yards right before. It was like a 3-3 game.
Sean Jones.
But 2003, right?
Yes. It was the 03 game.
And it was a huge, again, they had like 1,000 recruits there, and it was a super tight game right before halftime, and Georgia had a scoop and score and then just blew Tennessee out in the second half.
That was a bad one. I tell you, the best play that became the play of nothing was the Travis Stevens screen pass in 01.
Yes.
That was the best play. That was the memorable play that became the nothing play after middle squib and hobnail boot. So, lots of memories, lots of good, lots of bad. We'll see what happens with Tennessee and Georgia on Saturday night. 007 Vol wants to know, what was the last Vol freshman quarterback to beat Florida and Alabama in the same season? Obviously Nico this year, but before him, I'm curious. You got to go back to 2004. Eric Ainge beat Georgia, Florida, and Alabama that year. Which is why a lot of people anointed him the next Peyton Manning, including former Tennessee head football coach Philip Fulmer at SEC Media Days heading into the 2005 season.
While he was mired in a battle to win the starting quarterback job.
While he was in the middle of a quarterback battle with Rick Clawson to be the starter. But that's the last one to do it. All right, Nick
did
T.
Hold on a minute. Did you just tip off everybody that Peyton's truly been the head coach all these years? Behind.
No, I misspoke.
Shadow head coach.
I'm not good at hosting, AP. Have you not figured that out yet? I can't read names.
You hosted it for years.
There's lots of things I can't do in this thing. Nick T wants to know, likelihood Vols win this week if they rush for more than 175 yards and don't have any turnovers. Also, any chance Arkansas does us a solid this week and upsets Texas?
I think that's possible, but it's unlikely. I would still take Texas. They beat them 3 years ago, though, Rob. You know, I mean, Texas is a little bit better shape than they were now. But Texas, again, this is a team. It depends on, like, if you turn the ball over, if you're able to ball control it a little bit. you know, what Talen Green shows up. As for Tennessee, I would think Tennessee's chances improve dramatically if they're able to do what the poster suggested.
I would say if you run for 175, don't turn it over, and win the turnover battle plus two, something like that. I think that would be a really good recipe. And it's hard for me to believe Arkansas has any pulse left after Ole Miss did what they did to them in Fayetteville a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I think if you run for 175, Rob, and don't turn it over, you're sitting there with a great chance to win.
Give me that all day. I mean, is there a prop bet on FanDuel somewhere where I can get that? I'd take that for sure.
Yeah, I think that would be the ideal scenario if you can pull it off. Considering Tennessee's not been able to run the football other than one play in this series since Josh Heupel's been the head coach, even though Tennessee's been a 2,000 yard team and one of the best teams in the SEC running the football. Outside of Jalen Wright to open the game last year, they've not done anything running the football against Georgia. Very different Georgia defense than it's been the last few years, for sure. Crayon wants to know, do you think we will see this much parity in college football from now on, or is this just one of those crazy years that will cycle off to normality, one or two juggernauts capable of winning it all? Where is college football in 5 years? Is it what it is now, or will it be a completely different version of it? Let's start with those two. They kind of go together. Rob, is this college football? Is what we're seeing now the norm?
I mean, I don't know if it's going to be this crazy every year, but I mean, I think the era of the juggernauts are over just because of NIL and transfer portal. I mean, I just don't think you're going to be able to stack five stars upon five star. I mean, these kids aren't going to come and sit and wait 2 and 3 years at Alabama, Georgia, USC, Ohio State. That's what I think.
I think the parity will continue because of the portal and because of players that can play at a higher level, finding that place where they can play and perform well. I mean, look at Vanderbilt and what they did against Alabama earlier this season. I mean, that's the kind of the new look of college football. You find that quarterback in the portal who lights a fire under your program, and you win some football games, and suddenly Alabama's fighting for a playoffs. But I do think it'll look, I mean, different in 5 years, because what was it 5 years ago compared to what it is today? I mean, what's the number of playoff spots in 5 years? How's the bracket set up? What's the conference, you know, X number of teams from each conference are going to get a spot, all that stuff. I think it's going to look vastly different, but I do think it'll continue to be crazy parity, hard to win, and stack championships like programs have.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is you're going to continue to see more and more parity. The NFL model is something that, you know, people have started to describe more and more and more and more. I think you'll continue to see that. And 5 years from now, man, who knows? I mean, look what's changed in the last 5 years. The only thing I think that is a given is our version of Teeter, Matt Ray, will be all over Peyton Manning kids' recruitment in 5 years.
I'm curious about this, and I think parity is real. How different, with all of the distractions going on out there, is parity because there's a talent distribution greater than ever, or is there also some parity because it's so much harder to get 18 to 22-year-olds to be sort of single-minded focused now compared to what the distractions they had in front of them 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago?
Did Hubbard just blame parity on screen time, Grant? You've got two young kids, agents,
and all those people.
I'm just asking: is the distractions greater, Rob Lewis? That's all. No,
I think they are, but I mean, I don't know how you quantify that. To what we're seeing on the field, but I agree, Hubbard. I mean, I agree. There are a lot more distractions.
I think kids today have grown up with distractions, and it's all they know. Like, they don't know any other mode of life. I think the biggest thing is the portal and these guys from lower levels, smaller programs that can play at a higher level, moving up and making those teams better, and those teams executing in the portal, finding what they need, and building better rosters from that based on what you've already seen from kids that aren't just high school kids that have been in college, have played college football, seeing what you need and going and finding it and becoming a better football team because of it. I think there's more programs that have a pulse because of that, because they're finding the right guys in the portal.
Well, that's an interesting point about having growing up with distractions. I hadn't really thought of it that way. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, Hubbard, we've been doing this a long time. I mean, don't you think there are just more players? I mean, is more better? There are more better players. I think there. I mean, just with the camps and the coaching and the clinics and everything. I mean, I think there are I mean, we've talked about it specifically with the quarterback position, you know, how that's evolved, you know, in over 20 years. I mean, I think there probably are, I mean, I don't know. I think there are more, you know, just more, there are probably more kids out there. I certainly think that's the case in basketball, for sure.
And the kids that don't get discovered during the recruiting process go somewhere and put their play on tape and prove themselves at that level and they move up.
Just more awareness. I mean, just more chances to get seen.
Well, and I think you got more development of guys, right? So you have more of an impact, which is why you don't stack classes. Another reason why you don't stack classes, because you're playing young players. A, you have to, or they go in the portal. But B, young players are ready to go. I mean, Boo Carter was ready to play when he got off the bus. Now, he didn't know everything in the system, but from a physical and athletic ability standpoint, he was clearly ready to play right out of the gate. And I think you're seeing more and more of those guys who are ready to play earlier as the years go on. It's been that way for a while, but I think it's only going to continue that way as well. So bottom line is, I do think parity is here to stay, and the NFL model is a pretty good way to describe it at this point. His final question was, over under 2.5 Power 4 head coaches being replaced this year. Seems like we'll see more of what's happening at FSU than mass firings of head coaches.
I mean, I do think, because, you know, when what was Phillips' buyout, like $6 or $8 million when he got fired in 2008? I mean, now all the buyouts, especially if you've had a decent head coach, are $40, $50, $60, $70, $80 million.
I mean, Norvell's $63 million, right? I mean, it's 60-something.
Yeah, I mean, they're all just gross. And so people just don't have that kind of money, especially when you go start working in revenue share. So it is a little bit more advantageous to say, fire your coaches and go hire new assistant coaches, and we'll see if we can generate something through the coordinator route.
It's a lot cheaper. And again, I mean, money's a real thing right now when you're talking about having to have the $20 million rev share deal. And as you mentioned, I mean, you know, it's like, I think Rip Venable's buyout's over $40 million at Oklahoma. Well, they're not in a position to make that move. I mean, was Florida, I mean, look, I think Billy Napier saved and did a good job holding this team together, but how much of that situation was finances, you know, as well as leadership there? So I don't think you're going to see as many head coaching changes. I think you're going to see schools more patient with them. The challenge, you know, the question is, do you ever get to a point where people's buyouts get more normal?
I think you do. I mean, I think you have to. I mean, don't you, I mean, at some point, somebody's got to be the first one.
Yeah, but who's going to be that school?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, what about Florida State?
I mean, a Power 4 school. Who's going to be that Power 4?
I mean, for sure. There's got to be, it's got to be one that tells their coach, all right, you know, go interview for the Alabama job.
And yeah. I mean, because Florida State's like, oh, man, he's a candidate at Alabama. Well, we got to pay him.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they did. And now, look, I mean, they're not the only ones out there, but because they're, you know, 1-9 or whatever, they're the most glaring example. But it's happened, like you mentioned Napier, but there's a bunch.
Yeah. And I do think you'll see the fewest amount of moves with head coaches that we've seen in a while. Market Square Streaker wants to know, is there any chance that there's some level of gamesmanship with the Nico injury? If so, how would that help Tennessee against Georgia?
I don't think so. I mean, it's not like Tennessee has two different types of quarterbacks, and now they've got to prepare for the runner versus the passer. You know, I mean, like, I think this just boils down to, you know, how much more does he do as the week goes along? As we talked about on the board on Wednesday, he did team periods, you know, some team periods on Wednesday. That's a step in the right direction, because on Tuesday, Hubbard, it was more just individual stuff.
Yeah, I think with the availability report, too, it's harder to play the gamesmanship stuff, right? I mean, the days of, you know, dressing somebody in a different number or having a guy come out and, you know, won't go through full warm-ups and then take the uniform off of him and some of those things. I mean, I just think with, you know, if you don't travel the guy, you got to list him as out. If you don't travel a guy, I'm not saying the guy Nico, I'm just saying a guy, you can't list him there. I think some of that gamesmanship has been alleviated a little bit with the availability report.
I think gamesmanship would have been Saturday night saying, we don't know what his status is, we'll see later in the week. And then on Monday saying, we don't know what his status is, we'll see later in the week. And on the teleconference on Wednesday saying, I don't know, we'll see later in the week, that kind of thing.
Yeah, which is kind of what I thought he would do.
And I'm just ready for it to be over. At the end of the day, I'm just ready for it to be over, because, you know, everybody keeps calling you guys. They keep calling me. They keep calling everybody they know. I mean, Ryan Jacobs has called me 6,000 times this week about Nico's availability. You know?
AP, what do you think about his availability?
It's like that. It's basically it's. I'm just going to go back to Hubs. Hey Hubs, who are they going to replace Bob with? That's my response to everything.
I mean, I will say Josh has been pretty cavalier about it. If he's not going to play,
yeah, I agree. I mean that you know, because again, if I were a coach, my answer to everything post game and on Monday at my press conference would be, we'll see how things go this week, and we'll put out an injury report. We have to put out our injury report Wednesday night. That would be my standard answer. That would be like stamped on a card, and that would be on the podium. That's how I answer every injury question.
We need a Rick Barnes moment where he just keeps talking until he gives you the news. That has happened before.
On more than one occasion.
There was a media day where we asked about Quentin Dabunje, and it started with Quentin Dabunje might look around, and actually he's going to go in the portal. Actually, he's going to go to East Carolina. He's going to go play for Mike Schwartz, all in the same answer. It's amazing.
Oh, how fun that is. CN31 wants to know, should Cam Seldon be used more in short yardage when Sampson is getting a breather? It seems to make more sense to me than Lewis if Bishop is not available. Seldon is bigger and more physical. Lewis goes down on contact and needs a hole to get going.
I do not think that's not true. Seldon is not bigger. Now, more physical, that is up to interpretation, but he's not bigger. I think both of them honestly run probably too high, and you know, that probably hurts both of them. But Peyton Lewis, yeah, I mean, he's got to run lower, I think, in those situations.
Well, and they're both, they've had a total different number of carries, obviously, but they're both averaging about the same number of yards per, you know, after contact. Is their average yards after contact is about the same. Do you think 12 personnel package plays a big role on Saturday? Grant, I kind of think that's who Tennessee is at this point offensively, is two tight ends.
Yeah, it's worked. It's been productive. I mean, you're relying on a run game and a defense that has carried you for the last X number of weeks. Why not keep doing that? I think the best way to do that is 12 personnel. If you can establish it early and get it going, you got to do something around the game. I mean, it's what you talked about earlier in the pod. They haven't ran against Georgia. You better do whatever you got to do to find a way to get some kind of production on the ground to kind of settle yourself in there.
Yeah, I think it's certainly that they've got to remain and they've got to lean on that grouping, because that's been their best and most consistent grouping all year long. All right, we've got a bunch more questions that we'll get to as many of them as we can. But first, a message from our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions.
Get Neyland loud this football season with Exterior Home Solutions, East Tennessee's first choice for exterior renovations.
Thanks again to our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions. Be sure and check them out at exteriorhomesolutions.com. And we thank them for all that they do here at VolQuest.com. And again, you'll get great service if there's any way they can help you with your roofing needs, siding needs, or whatever it might be. All right, let's roll back into the questions here. Doolittle Vol, if chalk holds through the end of the season, is it most likely that there will be five SEC teams vying for four spots in the playoffs? In your opinion, what will be the main data points to determine who gets in? I know we talked about this off the top. Do we have any idea what the data points are?
No.
No, they change.
I think AP said it best. I think it's TV.
To quote Barney Fife, not a clue, not a blessed clue.
Gulf Ghost Vol wants to know, Kentucky and Mississippi State both had success on the ground against Tennessee. Some of that's due to poor run fits and misassignment, but it also looked like Tennessee was prioritizing pass defense. Is that a fair assessment?
Hubbard, you do a great job with your deep dive on Sunday, and I don't know the answer to this, but it looked to me like Tennessee was getting confused by the motion. At least on like those traps right up the middle, were they like motioning somebody out?
Yeah, I mean, I think they did some things to move the linebackers a little bit to get a lighter box. I do think this, in particular, in the second half, once Tennessee got a lead and was pretty comfortable there, I do think Tennessee kind of said, you know what, the only way Mississippi State can get back in this thing is if they throw it over our head. And I think if you look in the second half, there were a whole lot of light boxes. There were some light boxes in the first half because of some scheme stuff I think that State did, and I think Tennessee had a couple of misfits here and there. But I do think Tim Banks made a conscious decision and said, you know what, if you want to run it, if you want to count numbers and run it 25 times in the second half and we're up two plus scores, we're good with that, you know, and we'll play kind of the shorten the game a little bit. They shortened it offensively with how they managed the clock, Grant. And I think the bigger concern that Tennessee had was giving up a big play to let Mississippi State maybe get back in the game. So I do think there was a little bit of, you know, scheme adjustment to make sure they didn't give up a big play.
It's a pretty big compliment for Tennessee's defense to think, man, they're kind of looking a little bit leaky, and they give up, what, 14 points and, what, less than 300 total yards, and the quarterback, I thought he looked okay, Michael Van Buren. I thought he made some plays, but you look at his stats at the end of the night, he really didn't feel like he did anything when you look at the box score. I think you're playing at a pretty elite level when you can ask questions about a defense and they're still only giving up X number like Tennessee is.
I think that's what Tim Banks felt on Tuesday when Hubbard asked him about the defense.
Exactly what he felt like when my opening question was about, hey, you're giving up a bunch of rushing yards. What's wrong? And I think he was kind of like,
and 32 points 2 weeks, yeah. Buddy.
I think we're doing okay. Let's go to Brzee, who wants to know, with the increased recruitment of Jaden Pilati, what does the staff feel like? Does the staff feel like they will inevitably lose gas to Georgia, AP?
No, I don't know why people think that you have to have for one to happen, the other has to happen. Like that's, you know, I mean, Georgia's sure not giving up on Christian Gass. They're not giving up on Shady Hayward. Travis Smith's going to visit there this weekend. I don't think you have anything to worry about with Smith. I think this just boils down to, you know, he wants to go watch a good football game. And that's what a lot of kids do. I mean, Rusty said this when he was on with Josh Newberg on Tuesday, you know, like kids like to go to big time games, you know, so, you know, Juju Lewis, you know, everybody says he's going to flip from USC to Colorado. He's going to be at the Tennessee-Georgia game. Kids like to go to big-time games. They like to be in big-time atmospheres. I think with Perlotti, you know, I think he made an emotional decision because he got out there and saw the bright lights of L.A., and now you look back several months later and it's like, man, it's hard for my parents to come watch me play and this and that. So, you know, he starts to look around. So, you know, again, I think Tennessee's continued to move in the right and trend in the right direction there. We'll see if they can get that one across the finish line, but I don't think him, you know, flipping is indicative of Christian Gass flipping to Georgia. Could happen, but I don't think one has to do with the other.
They're not linked together. They're mutually exclusive situations. What is up with Cam Seldon? Sorry if it was already asked, but Heupel said his effort and attitude were good. I know he said that he's missed time because he had something to do with injury, yet I don't recall seeing him on the injury report. What is his outlook going into the winter? AP, I think we all thought he was going to redshirt until Tennessee got banged up at running back. Now he's not going to redshirt. I think that's going to be an interesting one to see what happens this offseason with Cam Seldon, don't you?
I do. I think that's one that, you know, it will bear watching. It won't surprise me at all if he decides to leave. You know, just based off the fact that, you know, he kind of 2 years in and he's played a little bit here and there, but, you know, you got half your eligibility gone and you've returned some kicks and played a little backup tailback.
Volunteered 87. When are the founder suites or whatever the new suites being built are called going to be available? Also, I know they don't fall in my family's budget, but given the scarcity of them, do you know what the process looks like beyond the Haslams and Peyton being at the top of the list? I also know it's still early, but regarding the entertainment district, are they tearing down G10 or building on top of it? When do you expect that project to be done? Founder Suites will be done next year. There's a limited number of them, and I think that they probably have 10 sold, right, AP?
That's correct.
I don't think there's any for sale signs on the Founder Suites at this point. I think they're 10 for 10 on that one. As for the entertainment district, Grant, they say G10's got to come down, and it's going to come down if they build this entertainment district. We'll see. We'll kind of see where that thing is and goes. It's all in a design developmental, you know, forecasting stage at this point. I know there's been some approval on stuff, but I don't see any way that thing gets started until there's some, I mean, completely buttoned up, completely locked in. This is how we manage parking for students. This is how we manage parking for basketball, concerts, and all these events, because that's such a hub for traffic, for car traffic, for so many events on campus, not just football games. It's not, and you don't build one of those in the off season, right? I mean, you're not going to wait till the end of basketball season, tear that thing down and build a new one and have it ready to go by the time you roll into football season.
What do we see first? A ribbon cutting on the Neyland Entertainment District, as in it's finished and open and ready for business, or Alcohol Highway is complete, done,
ooh.
Fixed?
Ooh.
Alcoa Highway.
Talking to you, T-Dot.
You know what's crazy? I remember the first time I remember this, seeing them digging on Alcoa Highway over towards UT Medical Center, that area near the river. I was driving for a Butch Jones press conference in 2013. And it's 2020, what, almost 2025.
Here we thought you were going to say your parents had flown into Knoxville and you were looking out, you were looking at your car seat.
It's true. Feels like it.
Govall's 182. What do we have to do to come away with a win on Saturday? Give me
score more points than the other team.
All right, I knocked that one off. Give me a key or two, guys.
Big chunk plays in the passing game because Tennessee's not going to drive the football.
All right, there's Rob Lewis's key to the game. What do you got, Grant Ramey?
It feels like they've been in second and eight since Fayetteville. Like, avoid that second and long. I don't know what you got to do, but just avoid that.
The second and eight between the tackle run play, avoid that one.
And the between the tackle to set up the second and eight. I don't know. Just avoid that. Like, move the sticks a little bit early on and kind of settle in. Don't let that thing get away from you early. And find a way to stay out of that second and long that they've been in so much lately, it feels like.
Best of my recollection, when down in Athens 2 years ago, they ran a lot early, and then they would get behind the, you know, because they couldn't run it, then they would, you know, try to pass. I think Tennessee's, you know, got to be a little more creative in the passing game, whether it be, maybe do a little side to side early, but at some point you're going to have to fake that and try to hit them with a double move. Like Tennessee's got to be able to, you know, hit plays. They don't have to be 60-yard plays. They got to be 30-yard plays.
Or
you know
even
what I mean?
15 like, or 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you go back and look at it, I think they've got like one 30-yard play in the last 3 years against Georgia.
And they're averaging like 2.4 yards. I mean, I don't know what it is, but it ain't good, like the run on the ground. It's less than 3 yards a carry.
Here's another one. Don't wear the orange pants. The orange pants are a disaster. White pants on the road.
Yeah, straight stormtroopers, right? Right. No orange britches. All right.
What about the orange helmet?
Not this week. Nashville 615's got a few questions here, so we'll go individually with these. What does Dylan Sampson have to do to get some Heisman attention? Feel like no one is talking about him. Grant Ramey?
He would have to go even crazier than he's gone because he's put up crazy numbers and he's got virtually zero Heisman attention odds, whatever it is. He'd have to go crazy.
I think if he went Travis Stevens 01 Florida this week,
all right. That would
he
be crazy.
Still wouldn't get crazy. In the mix. I just think it is what it is. Like, I just don't think anybody thinks of him in that ilk like they do others.
Yeah, I don't think he's in the hunt for it.
What if he had 1,900 yards and 20 touchdowns or whatever his numbers are, and he's playing for Colorado right now?
Then he's already got the trophy. Right. He's polishing it.
Right.
I do think Travis Hunter wins it. I do think he's probably the best player in college football.
I don't disagree with that.
All right, who on the roster is a likely offensive line starter next year? Lance Hurd.
I would go William Satterwhite
at center. Yeah,
I am fascinated to see it. I look forward to the day that they can't just go back to what they've seen for 4 years. And don't get me wrong, I love Cooper Spraggins, all of them. I love them all. But, like, I do think it will be good for the program to have to say, okay, we can't, they're not here anymore. What do we do? Okay, you get in there. Oh, that's not too bad. Okay.
Like, I think it'll be fascinating to see how active they are in the portal at that position as well. I mean, what does that look like in December? I think it's going to be a pretty fascinating storyline when you talk about building this roster for 25. How aggressive are they? How comfortable do they feel who they have? How do they go about that? It's going to be some interesting decisions that are made by Josh Heupel, Joey Halsley, and Glenn Ellerbe here. In a very real scenario that six SEC teams finish 10-2, how do you think Tennessee's resume would stack up? Have a hard time seeing more than four SEC teams make the college football playoff? Guys, I don't think there's any way more than four make it unless Notre Dame's out of the equation.
Yeah, or unless Indiana gets hammered so bad that they have to drop them out.
You want to avoid the doomsday 10-2 scenario where a billion teams are 10-2 in the SEC and you got to go down that list and figure out tiebreakers and rely on the selection committee to pick the right teams out of that group.
I agree. I think Tennessee's out in that instance.
All right.
And in that instance, Texas is out too. Should be anyway.
Yeah, but again, their resume is getting lots of love. I mean, because
Michigan team.
It looks better by the week, right? It looks better by the week.
How much mileage are Michigan and Texas both getting from beating a, or not Michigan and Texas, but Indiana and Texas from beating a crappy Michigan team?
A lot, a whole lot of mileage. I mean, a lot of mileage for sure. Rob, teams that have had success running the football against Georgia have used quarterback runs heavily. Jalen Milroe, and then obviously Jackson Dart was the leading rusher for Ole Miss last week. How many rushing attempts would you expect to see from Nico if he's on the field Saturday?
I would say not many designed. I mean, if he's playing this week, Josh and Joey have peered over the edge of the cliff. I would say not a lot. Designed runs.
I mean, I think it's hard.
You've lived it. You lived it the second half against Mississippi State. I would say, based off that, I would say not a lot.
Grant, would you agree with that?
I would agree. Designed, no.
Anyway, right?
Yeah, right. Designed, no, but he is going to have to run. Part of it. He's going to have to extend plays. He's going to have to pick up X number of yards here and there to put them in better situations down and distance-wise. To pick up first downs, like that's part of the game. Like you're going to have to run it. You're going to have to slide. You're going to have to get down. I mean, he was hurt in theory on a pass play, if I'm not mistaken, in the first half against Mississippi State. So you're taking a risk either way. You better do whatever you have to do to keep yourself driving the football in this football game, moving the sticks, all that stuff.
Grant Ramey with a scared money don't make money.
That's right.
This is Billy Napier for the day. Speaking of Nico, here's one more from Orange since 78 AP. Can they really work on crowd noise this week with Nico being in quote protocol?
Well, that was my point, right? Like that's been my point. Like you can't, and I said that on the board on Tuesday night when all the bear stuff was out there. Like, listen, did he have concussion symptoms? Absolutely. Right. But like, there's no way it was a bad concussion. If you're out there in the cauldron of speakers if you ever watched the movie Waco, when they're out there and they try to, use the lights at nighttime to get them to come out, and they use the noise all throughout the day. That's what that weird, it's like this awful noise. Like we hear it and we're like, oh, that's so bad. But it's like annoying. There's no way a kid that has had a bad concussion is out there in the daylight with the noise that's going on at practice as they try to, simulate, what it'll be like in Athens. And there's really no simulation for it because the sound does not stay down in like it will at Sanford Stadium.
AP, in hindsight, you really should have had Brett Kendrick on today to walk everybody through. Like,
there's no doubt.
What you feel like on Monday, what you feel like on Tuesday. I think BK, shout out. He would have loved to do that.
TDTN 1977. For Grant and Rob, what's going on with Darlingstone Dunbar? Do we expect this to be short term or long term? What's the situation there? Grant, I know you had news on that yesterday. Rob, you guys have been following that one. What's the story there?
I mean, it's a personal matter, and Tennessee has done a good job of keeping it a personal matter. He went back to practice activity Monday and Tuesday, I believe. Not full swing like 5-on-5, just diving right back into it, but kind of working on the side, and it looked like ramping up. I think the timeline is still uncertain, but it feels like it's moving in the right direction. He's been with the team. He was in Louisville. He was smiling, having a good time pregame with his teammates, rebounding basketballs, all that stuff. So feels like it's headed in the right direction, whatever is going on there.
I don't want to minimize whatever's going on with the kid, but if you're worried about it impacting Tennessee's one loss record, it's just not a huge factor either way.
Right. I mean, he didn't play a ton against Indiana, and I don't know that he would be playing a ton of minutes if he were available. That could change as the season goes on. We'll see.
All right, we got, I think, two more left here. Brandon _ SV, does the staff have zero faith in Khalif Keith? They burned Seldon's redshirt for a few series rather than playing him. Also, any behind-the-scenes progress reports on young offensive linemen, plus Jordan Matthews, Braylon Staley, Tyree Weathersby, and Caleb Beasley. AP, run the roster.
I know. I love these kind of questions. Khalifa Keith, I mean, he's just behind the others. It's as simple as that. What's it going to take for him to get in the mix? I don't know. That's it's a great question. As for the other ones, let's go over them one by one, Hubbard. Just read them to me.
All right, young offensive lineman.
Jesse Perry getting a lot of love. Satterwhite getting a lot of love. Tennessee, likes the other young kids they have. It's just a matter of they're in season, and so, they're not getting a ton of run. Go.
And what their off-season development looks like. Jordan Matthews.
Jordan played a little bit last week. You know, it's one that I think still has got to continue to, you know, build up his confidence. And, you know, probably next year at the earliest. Now, we'll see, though. Like, 2 years in, is he frustrated enough where he goes to the portal? I mean, that's always something, yeah, I think you have to be cognizant of.
Yeah, Tennessee should get both their corners back for next year, and McCoy and Ricky Gibson. Braylon Staley.
They love Braylon Staley. He's just redshirting. So, you know, it's just as simple as that. You know, I'm sure, you know, the plan is to try to get him out there for the UTEP game next weekend.
Tyree Weathersby.
Continuing to grow, you know, just behind a loaded room.
And Caleb Beasley.
I think his long-term future is at safety, you know, personally. But, you know, we'll see. I think this offseason will be big for him. Kid, you know, is it just been a natural born playmaker? So, you know, Tennessee, I know, wants to, you know, continue to have him progress.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, it's everybody's have this staff's high on everybody right now, right? I mean, it's kind of the way it's been. So we'll see what happens with, you know, with their offseason development with some of those guys. All right. Last question here. I'm saving this one for the end just for you guys. Mindvol. And in the offseason, there was a lot of talk from the SEC regarding the agreement for greater revenue share of the college football playoffs starting in 2026, as well as how many teams the SEC should get in the college football playoff compared to other conferences and independents. It was also discussed that if the SEC thinks it's not being fairly represented in the college football playoff, it could decide to break away and start its own playoff. Do you think the College Football Playoff Committee and ESPN executives are aware and are influenced by all the discussion from the SEC and the possibility of them breaking away if the SEC does not get what they want?
I'm sure they're cognizant of it. Does it impact them? I don't know. I think the SEC is going to end up with four. And the Big Ten's going to end up with four.
And I think if they're – I mean, the only thing that's going to break away is if two conferences break away. You're not breaking away just your own individual conference, right, Grant.
And it's the Big Ten and the ACC. I mean, they had a meeting, the commissioners, right, in Nashville a few weeks ago. I mean, they're running this. They're running this moving forward because they're working together. And it's basically, we're going to run this or we're going to take our ball and go home. So I don't know if it influences the number of teams that get in the 2024 college football playoff, but it's going to affect stuff down the line because they're the ones that are meeting and being in charge of this stuff and deciding on, it feels like, how many teams are going to be in total, and then how many teams from each conference are going to get in, X number of spots guaranteed, I guess, for a conference. I don't know. I think it's not just an SEC thing. It's an SEC Big Ten thing.
Yeah. And Rob, I think as kind of not that question, but kind of a offshoot to that a little bit, I do think it's going to be really interesting after seeing however this year plays out in the college football playoff rankings and who gets in and who doesn't get in, where the SEC stands on nine conference games, right? Revenue versus what gives you the best chance to get the most teams in the playoff for additional revenue that's coming down the pike. Plus, how do you schedule? And I think right now you don't know the answer to that because the messaging seems to be all over the map, but the Big Ten seems to be benefiting from the fact they're not beating each other up as much, right?
ESPN, I'm sure, I mean, is driving the train to have nine conference games. Is how much more valuable is that? If I'm the SEC, I'm looking right now, I'm like, you know, look at Ole Miss and Tennessee, and you know all these two lost teams would just maul, you know, all these pretenders that are going to be in the playoff, and you know, you want us to play another game that's going to put, you know, that's going to further hurt, you know, our team's chances of getting to the playoff. And I mean, to me, if I'm Sankey, I'm waving that nine game conference schedule as a big stick. Like, you know, you want us to play one more, you want us to play one more game that's going to make you a gajillion dollars, and you're penalizing us for beating each other up because we do play, you know, I mean, to me, that's a non-starter playing nine games, Harbor.
I think with where it stands right now, this is the biggest thing against going to a nine game schedule. I think every AD and coach in the conference right now is going, see, why do you want an extra game? I mean, look what we're doing. I mean, I think it's going to be pretty interesting to see what that discussion point looks like with nine conference games. And how do you schedule nine conference, right? Is part of Tennessee being where they're at because they played UTEP, Chattanooga, and Kent State? Or is it all because they lost to Arkansas?
It's all because they lost to Arkansas.
So what's the point in schedule? You know, what do you schedule? I mean, you know, Georgia schedules Clemson. Okay, maybe Clemson's not as good as they people thought they were going to be, but you know, they fell hard with a loss to Ole Miss in November. So what's the benefit in playing games like that? I think that's what every AD and coach or every coach is telling the ADs, like, why are we going to do that? Why do we want to beat ourselves up? And certainly we don't want to add an extra conference game because all that's going to do is further eliminate us, which will make for some interesting off-season scheduling discussion for sure. And there'll be plenty of discussion about a variety of things at VolQuest.com, including all the buildup to this game Saturday night as Tennessee goes to Athens, Georgia, and tries to get themselves in a situation where they go up the rankings in the college football playoff ranking and put themselves in a spot to go to Atlanta for the SEC championship game. A lot on the line this weekend for both Tennessee and Georgia. We got it all covered for you. Basketball coverage, recruiting coverage, all kinds of things at VolQuest.com. So be sure and check us out there. And thanks for listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions. For Rob Lewis, Grant Ramey, and Austin Price, and Brett Hubbs, thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of your Thursday, everybody.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.